Recording in progress.
Are you going to do that every time we start now? The little,
Literally
like,
every
recording in progress?
Because that's what Zoom does every single time. And if you're not zooming and looming, then you're dooming, you know? And I don't
we
know who's
talking about this hair
is.
Pulling thing. They just
okay,
about
that's been
pulling.
My whole life. I always do the twirls. I'm always, like, twirling it out. It's
well,
like my
we have to check in. We have to check in on this episode and see how the lizards are doing. How are the lizards doing?
Okay. Honestly, lizards' plot twist have become a protection mechanism because hear me out. All right. Listen.
I can't wait to hear it.
Okay. So the other day I was walking out in the backyard and our neighbor has a shed and their roof is like tilted towards our fence. So we can see pretty much the whole shed roof from our backyard. I was looking on the roof and all of a sudden I saw like what looked like our child's used diapers on their roof.
What are you talking about? No, this is serious.
Like, you know, whenever the child's done with a diaper, you like wrap it up and you know, the more like free birds. Well, their perfectly wrapped diaperellis are all up on these people's roofs. And I was like, and they have a grandchild that comes over every once in a while. So I was like, wait, did their grandkid maybe like throw their own diapers up there? I don't know. But then I got close as I could and those diapers were definitely ours. And I was like, what the heck? So I had to at least ask my husband once, like, hey, I don't think you would do this. But like,
did you ask him for real? Like, did you throw diapers on the neighbor?
No, I mean, you have to. Like, you have to be like, hey, was this like, do we need a battle royale? Like, what's going down?
And he was
like, no way in heezy would I ever go find a dirty diaper in the trash, sneak it out, and throw it on the roof of our neighbor's shed. And I was like, cool. Didn't think so. But just, you know, poking around. And sure enough, at 9 o'clock that night, I went to go take out the dogs and 6 full-grown raccoons walked down our fence line like a gaggle of them. And not only that, they were aggressive. Like these were like,
well, raccoons aren't anything to mess with.
Not whenever they're in like best friend mode. So guess what? They all walk up to the shed and we're like, good, our dessert we left to bake in the sun. And they were the ones who went through the outdoor trash, got the diapies, put it out in the sun, came around nighttime and were like, delish, brought them, went over the fence into the field.
That is
and so,
so
guess what?
Gross.
No, but you know what is the only thing that I think helped me rally was whenever those dang hyena/raccoon started like pumping up on me and being like, what you want? These are our diapers. The only thing that protected me, one of those dang old lizards ran through and guess what? That was just enough. And they backed off the fence and they went hip hop. And so the point is that at the end of the day, I think that these monstrous lizard iguana reptars might be a solution to the raccoon issue that we have had because of the field in the back of our house.
Welcome to Talentless, the podcast that's all HR, all talent, and zero fluff. Hosted by industry talent leaders Desiree Goldie and Ashley King, and made for recruiters who think of talent outside of the box. They're here to dig into the heart of what makes workplaces tick and sometimes blow up. They are not afraid to get into the messy, the meaningful, and the downright motivating. So buckle up, because they're here to make you the best in the business. Now, let's get to work.
Well, folks, that's the update for our lizard story. Diapers, raccoons. I mean, it's getting crazy out here. Tonight, we're taping a little light and we're talking about how all roles aren't created equal. You can't hire a software engineer and a sales manager the same way. And so we're going to get into the nitty gritty of it all. And, you know, I think this is going to be an interesting episode because if you've been following us and listening to us, we did industry nuances last time. And we did touch on the role stuff a little bit, but I think we are going to get into it a little bit more tonight. And so let's start it off. Ashley.
Yes, ma'am.
People say recruiting is recruiting, right? It's all the same. We said this last time on industry nuances, but I think I wouldn't cook and I'm a big chef in my house, right? I wouldn't cook the creme brulee like I would cook the steak. So I just think there's some business fundamentals that come along with how you hire in different roles. And I really would love to have you explain to the audience what we're getting into right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I would say first and foremost, recruiters need to understand not just what the job is, but how that job operates in the organization specifically and how the market values that skill set and what success would actually look like for that function and its overall impact in the micro and macro setting. So the difference between sourcing for a sales development role and a staff engineer isn't just a rec, it's a whole different playbook. If you want to win credibility with your hiring managers and ultimately reduce misalignment, duplicated efforts, and actually end up closing deals with candidates that are meant for this type of role, are a fit within the organization, and overall the organization is a fit for them as well. Role nuances is going to be kind of your cheat code for understanding the different quirks of all of these different roles and different kind of maybe even departments within the organization as a whole.
And I completely agree. Like we could be in a, it, we could already have the industry nuance part, but then within that industry or different roles within that industry, what makes up that role? What does the process look like for that role? Maybe different. All of those kind of quirks that we talk about in recruiting that people think we just look at a resume and we hire somebody. That's not how it works. There's so many things to think about as you think about how you're going to put somebody through the process if they have to have an assessment. How is the hiring manager going to evaluate for that role? And it really is, I think, when you get into these role nuances can be and feel so heavy and detailed, because how you do the upfront work to me is how you get the right candidate in the seat. And I think that's a huge point that we've always made on this show, is that doing that upfront work and being that SME is super important to get to the right person in the right seat.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that talent infrastructure as a whole and understanding the nuances of pretty much anything that has to do with the rec itself is going to be important. And so just like some classic differences. And I know that for niche roles, we actually, and Steph, you didn't know before, now talent outside of the box, we actually chatted about how you can have sales roles, but because they're revenue generating, it actually can impact your headcount and how you maybe do layoffs or how you restart after doing layoffs or what roles go on hold and things like that. There's also a lot of different nuances within go-to-market and engineering as well. So some things that may seem common is like in go-to-market, communication's key because of your executive presence and you're communicating with clients. In engineering, communication is key, but it's not because of the same reason. It's because they usually work a lot asynchronously. They usually have like daily stand-ups, depending on their environment, if it's like an agile or however that is. So there is something to be said about the fact that we're looking for the same skill, but in the way that it's conducted is actually different. And I know that you may think, well, what does that matter? Well, let me tell you, I worked in an office and it is very easy to pop by someone's desk and go say, hey, what do you think about blah, 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 and just go from there. It is another thing whenever you work on the complete other side of the nation as them. And now I need to put every single thing that we need to chat about in an email because we work asynchronous hours. We work in agile environments to where we need to make sure everything's documented to where anyone can pick up and pull this up and do that. And so that's a completely different type of skill to work asynchronously and have written communication. That means that majority of your stuff isn't social interaction like interface. It's social interaction like reading. And for me... But I'm not that great at reading. I don't really enjoy it. I know that that sounds really not great. That's not to say I don't read books and specifically a ton of peer-reviewed articles. But it is to say that it is a very different muscle. And I would rather socially call up and ask someone any day versus, no, that's not to say I don't want you to text me. Please don't call me. People always text me.
Nobody wants a phone call.
Nobody wants a phone call. But it is to say that these are different muscles with the same title. And those are the type of nuances that we're talking about today, y'all. Yeah. Those really niche intricacies that differentiate what makes a good recruiter versus an excellent recruiter.
And you know, my love affair is with like go-to-market roles and like these kind of creative roles, these like really, because I get into the sales roles and like I get really deep into the nuances of them. And, you know, I've been a sales recruiter for, I feel like, since I was started in sales.
Right.
But, you know, I think those sales roles are so different, right? They have to understand, they have to have, you know, I hate the word rock star, but they have to be hungry and they have to be ready. Is there a hunter or a farmer? And you have to understand what that person's looking for. What are their growth targets? Understanding all of that. And can a person just live on commission sometimes? Jeez. How much drive do they have to sit in the seat and say, like, I don't need a base. I'm going to go out there and make every dollar I make just based on this company's product. And that is a different kind of person, right? So when we start to assess that type of skill set in a room like this, we're not in the same room, right? I have to be able to judge that person's drive in like a 45-minute conversation, if not 30. Yeah. And say, you know, that person has the skill set necessary to move to the next role to be able to prove that they're going to go out there and kill it in the field. And that is, you know, that it, and I know engineering is very similar, but different. And I use that on purpose and intentionally to say that there are certain nuances of each of these roles that are like, hey, if they can't do this in the room with you in 30 minutes, they're probably not going to be able to do that. So I think, listen, I've met the best technical recruiters. I've met the best sales recruiters. I consider myself one of them, by the way, just so everybody knows. But when you sit in the room with them, they're able to pick up those things really quickly, right? They're able to say, this person can work asynchronously. I cannot say that word, so forgive me. And other people, and it's also, I'm very tired.
all the physicals.
And then, you know, sales recruiting, you know, to be able to say 30 seconds or whatever it is, this person has the personality to work for whoever is the hiring manager. You know, some of that stuff gets really, really tough. And I think if you come to it prepared, you do better. But it's not always true that you're completely prepared to do that work if the hiring manager doesn't let you.
Yeah. I will say that I feel the like theoretical and logic approach to both are very different in the sense of like kind of what you were saying, but in the sense of like sales is like, I know in my gut in 10 seconds. Engineering is like, I need to put them through 14 rounds of tests.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a different analysis. I need all their back work from GitHub. It's like 50 different points, a full constellation of data that they would like for you to pull. And I mean, it's just two very different approaches, both of which not really that great. You'll either get analysis paralysis or be judging on your gut, which is just a thing to say, I'm judging based off bias, no logic. And so essentially we have to talk both of them off the ledge and back more into center.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
In that work is whenever we realize these different nuances, it's the impact and how it stretches us as recruiters to have to say, man, more doesn't always necessarily help your decision making. We know that with just like cognitive dissonance in general, the more choices you have, the more loss you feel whenever you pick one. Because it's like, but I'm going to turn down 90, turning down 3. And it's like, no big deal. I picked what I wanted. And that's why weird fact, and this isn't even talent outside the box time, but that's why a lot of people actually report sometimes dissatisfaction with Cheesecake Factory. It's actually because they have so many options that people actually say that they enjoyed it less versus whenever they only do special menus and have perhaps 2 pages.
Do you know this is my favorite? This is my favorite example to everyone in the world. When you go to Cheesecake Factory and there are all 5 pages of things you can pick from, what do you think they do well? And how do you get stuck? You get analysis where you're like, well, I don't know. And how could you do anything well? Right.
Yeah.
I love that analogy. I love that. It's totally appropriate for this conversation. I could probably throw that example in anywhere, but it's a great one for this one.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, inch deep and a mile wide isn't the best, like, you know? But then also 1 mile deep and, you know, 1 inch wide isn't great. And that's what this is those different polars. And you have to bring both of them back to center. And I think, honestly, once you've learned as a recruiter, again, your manager's love languages, once you've learned the market and know how to say, like, hey, industry standard for sales is at max 4 interviews. Same for engineering, to be quite frank. Speaking of specific software engineers is what I'm thinking of in this. I don't need, like, I don't know, civil engineers messaging us like, oh, we go for 2 interviews.
Our transportation engineers, I've hired those.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's some stuff we don't need. But essentially, man, now you got me stuck on transportation.
That's okay. I just did it to throw you off tonight.
I mean, that was
it's such a random role.
It really is. You did really good.
It is a random role that I actually hired for them before. It's like they only want to go through 2 interviews because there's like 4 of them in the world. So you can get me or get no one.
Right. But and that's kind of the thing is if 4 is the industry standard for all of these recruiters, then what they're seeking is and how you solve for this is asking them, what is it that you're seeking? What is it the data that you think will give you the indication of the health of this candidate and if they would be a fit? Like, what is the true things that we need to seek out in order to do this? Because that will illuminate for us who is the fit and who is not. And so those also, again, look different. And the way that you pull these out is by finding out what are these actual core skills these individuals need. So for both skill sets, you would typically have an interactive session. In sales, your interactive session is usually a presentation. Yeah. It's some form of presenting something to a group. They're judging on executive presence. They're judging on content. They're judging on delivery. They're judging on how you've prioritized and how you've decided to speak, answer questions, and present this information to them. Versus whenever you're at engineering, we're talking an interactive session that is maybe more of coding with a share screen or perhaps an actual coding test through a third party. It's much more of a technical aptitude test versus how well can you speak. But for sales, that is their technical aptitude test.
Right. That is their technical assessment, right? You have to be able to communicate well.
Yeah. So there is a way to achieve all of the data that engineering needs, all of the gut feels that sales wants to achieve, and actually do it in a way that is not only compliant, but almost the exact same. The only thing different is their interactive session, which is what measures their technical aptitude, whatever that technical skill need be. So that's something that I think people should get accustomed to, too, is kind of this idea of, again, we can be measuring the same skill, communication. We can be doing the same interactive session, whatever it is, and still be measuring completely different things because of.
And I think that's a huge point, Ashley, because I think we get, you know, as we talked about doing this episode, I'm like, oh, we're going to have all these talking points. But I really think the major talking point is that, you know, the process somewhat lives the same of how you get to what that skill set is. You know, you should be working with your hiring manager. You should be doing those intakes. We may all be assessing the same things, but we just need to figure out how to pull out, you know, what the differentiators are for those roles. And I think that people get caught up. They're like, I was talking to someone today about technical recruiting and really into the nuances of technical recruiting. And we get so caught up in that engineers are so different, but so are salespeople. And so are, you know, directors of marketing. And so are, you know, I need to use myself. And so are like the next social media people. They have all their own nuances, but as you lead them and assess them, you can almost get to the same process. Just what you're assessing becomes different, or their assessment, their interactive session. Because if we're a social media person, we're looking at a portfolio most of the time. We're looking at metrics to assess what they've done in the past. You know, I've hired these people in the past, and I've gone literally to the company that they work at and been looking at their LinkedIn to see how well they're doing or their Instagram. That's a different assessment than me sitting in there and having a, 30 to 40 minute conversation whether they can do the work. And so you get really deep into this stuff and it really all levels out to be somewhat the same. It's just the assessment tool is a little different.
Yeah. And I would also say kind of their another thing is going to be the EVP, right? So like the sell to them is going to be very different.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And it's actually really interesting. So there's a dichotomy here, right? So like tech and engineers very much care about the tech stack. Is it cutting edge?
Yeah.
Is it something that's new? Is it fresh? Is it hot on the market? Or is this a stagnant, stone cold technology and you're making us bear the brunt?
Right.
Of, having to parse our labors with this crappy technology because you won't pay for more. And that's usually tech. Like they want to know that type of stuff. Sales kind of cares, but here's what's interesting. Whenever you are tied to a cost center, you usually have to work way harder to get tools and enablement and technology. And so this is a very weird dichotomy because a lot of times people in sales are like, I need SalesNav. Well, I need Salesforce. Well, I need blah, 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 and I need HubSpot and whatever. And then they can get any tool that they want. Why? Because they're bringing in a ton of money. Yeah. They are how the business runs in general. Without income, you have no outcome, which means you have no employees. And so essentially, it's interesting because the people who care about that the most, I mean, sales needs it to do their job, but it almost forces your engineers, if you don't have a leadership team who cares about prioritizing the tech stack, then it almost makes your engineers in that stagnant environment, no matter what, having to earn their tools, earn their enablement, and it actually makes for a much more scrappier team. So I know it sounds weird, but those organizations where maybe they didn't have senior leadership that really focused on cutting edge tech, that means that they've had to be an autonomous learner and very, very scrappy. And sometimes that's a nice cue to see on a resume too. So like weird loop here, but just a little call.
This episode is brought to you by DEI Labs, re-educating corporate America with immersive data-driven DEI training for HR and hiring pros. Ready to shift systems and spark real change? Visit DEI-labs.com to get started. Need a resume that actually works? Resume Writing is a female-owned team of recruiting pros helping job seekers land the roles they deserve. Get expert help at resumewriting.com.
Talk about sales and marketing, but this is a great point because the EVP does matter, right? If you're a person who comes from a high tool, company, and you're going to a smaller company that has no tools, right? For sales and marketing, that does matter, right? Mm. Like if I don't have a CRM and I've never worked without one, they want to know, like, do I have to work without a CRM? Do I have an SDR or BDR to back me up? Yeah. If I don't have any of that, I've never done that before. That's how I've done my sales. And then you've had people who have had none of that who, are like, I don't need any of that. I'm going to go do it on my own. And, salespeople are truly focused at the end of the day is what does their comp look like? Like, you have to be able to explain their comp to them to the nuance, right? OTE, all of those questions, they want to know. And they want to know how many times people have actually hit their goal. Because you can set all these wonderful numbers. If no one's hitting their goal, sales is like, okay, well, no one hits it.
Yeah.
Then what's the point of me being there? Marketers are a little different in that, they focus on the tools that they have in front of them. Do they have Adobe? Do they have, now an AI? Do they have all this content base and all these things that are able to do? And we know as hiring recruiters, when you're not working with no ATS, you're like, I got to work without an ATS. Like,
that's a bigger issue, but yeah.
But know what I mean? You have to find someone who could pull and... There's a lot of people that are like, I don't want to work someplace that doesn't have that. So I think tools and resources is a huge thing. But I think this leads into this other piece of this, which is like the exempt people versus the non-exempt type of roles that, it's a very different, to me, it's different. I would love to hear your opinion of whether that affects how you hire as well, whether they're exempt, non-exempt, are they working hourly, are they not? How does that affect kind of hiring?
Oh, opinion? That changes everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes the whole conversation. It changes your EVP. It changes your persona aptitude. It changes how you should do your interview. It changes your market. I mean, there's not a single thing that that doesn't change. I mean, even your benefits. I mean, yeah. The most basic of things all changes. How your work works, clocking in, not clocking in, having freedom to take 2 hours at lunch, having no freedom to take 2 hours at lunch, having to do a DuPont schedule, having to work 8 to 5. These are all very different things. And so with that comes all sorts of different bags.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and some of that is even integrated into the recruiter desk itself, meaning if you are recruiting for technicians, odds are you might have a high revolving door if it's, you know, $14 technicians who just cut the feet off of chicken as it goes past in the Tyson plane. Like, that could be the whole bag. And so with that, you're going to have a revolving door of always evergreen having to hire these roles. That is your skill set. That is your hiring.
Right. And the questions are different. Right? The whole thing is different. It's like you're not asking them when they want to make. They're usually like, okay, is it $14,
$15? You know, honestly, as long as they can breathe and we'll take it back.
Right.
Like, that's the hiring qualifications.
So you're not getting into all this real deep integrate. You're literally almost churning and burning them. And that is so different as a recruiter. It's a different mindset, especially if you come from where you're done engineering hiring of these people that ask you a million questions at the end in the interview. You're just trying to get someone to show up to the site on the first day. So those definitely affect your mindset as a recruiter, especially in high volume, especially these hourly roles. And I know I touch on this in industry nuances a lot in hospitality, and I think you touched on it in industrial as well. It's a very different mindset as a recruiter than when you're working in engineering and go to market. It's just it's a whole different bag. How you come to work is different. What your definition of success is different.
Very much.
Oh my gosh. Totally different.
And not only that, but the, just because I forgot my thought, so I need to mark it.
It's okay. It's late.
It is late.
Yeah.
There was something that I wanted to say about FUI. Now I'm almost like, I was almost there too. I could feel the end of the thought. I felt the caboose coming. And then it like shied away. It was like, nah, girl, JK, suffer
not
ye.
Not at all. See you later, girl.
Like, yeah, my brain is also Megan Thee Stallion, just so everyone knows.
I just want everybody to know that Ashley's brain is Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah, that who, like, most of y'all may have Morgan Freeman. You might have, I don't know who, but my narrator is Megan Thee Stallion. She's like, you're doing good, girl. Like, all the time, you know? Hot girl summer, Like, that's just, it's in my brain. Seared.
Megan, please reach out.
Like, please reach out. We've been talking about you since episode one, girl.
Yeah.
Like, you may not know it, but we know it.
We know it.
Okay, hey, back to this role business. No, so the other thing that I was going to say is the more you care as a recruiter, the better you're going to be at this. What do I mean by that? Whenever it comes to nuances, the best way to understand them is talking to the people who actually do the job.
Yes.
So one example of this is if you're new to, you know, recruiting CDL drivers, you may not know that one of the first questions they may ask, or just truck drivers in general, does the truck have air conditioning?
Right.
Like, question number one. So meeting them with that or putting that in the job description or those type of things will make you more efficient, more effective. And so it's tiny, itty bitty things like that.
Yes.
But the only way you get there is through asking those caring, thoughtful questions. Hey, is the vehicle that you're in, do they have air conditioning? Does it have a radio? Does it allow you to access mapping? Is it a smart vehicle? Like, these type of things, this is their whole kit and caboodle. This is what they do every day. It needs to matter whether they are a janitor or a CEO. Like, you need to care just the same. That's
and I think that caring is so important, because even that affects, to me, how you do your intakes. Like, Yeah. I care about the people I'm eventually going to put in this role. And we've talked about intake so much on this show, but yeah. Yes, there's all this real deep understanding and how you build out an intake. But for me, there is this element of just having empathy and caring about the people you're about to put in the seat and asking the right questions to that hiring manager to figure out the answers before you get on that phone call. I was just with a client and they could not give me the real comp. And for me, I'm like, listen, I'm not having an interview until you can tell me what these people will actually be making or what you're willing to pay, because that is empathy for the candidate, right? I don't want to get on a call and I'm just going to use a number, $150,000. And I don't even have an answer for you if that's realistic. So I think there's a lot of empathy and care that goes into how you build out these questions, how you think about these roles. And for each and every role, I think it could be a little different. It's going to be a little different.
Well, I think so too. And I also think that in that empathy seeking and things like that, if it is, because again, sometimes non-exempt can be a revolving door sometimes. That I would say is the biggest nuance between the two, if I'm being quite candid. Because, I mean, even if it's big money hourly, we still usually have high turnover. And so I have no idea the trends as to why that would be an interesting project for me.
That would be an intro. We should do
a
report.
I just might tell an outside the box coming 2026.
Tell us.
Research in your inbox. Hello. So not us, planning the future right here, right now. But my thought is if you do have that revolving door of talent, the only tool that you have, the only mechanism you have to lessen that is to have those deep conversations and understand, because that's how you find better candidates. You ask them up front. Because if you want people to stick around and you want people to stay, then you need to be setting better expectations, which means you need a very clear picture, which means you need to be asking the right questions, which means you have to be curious, you have to be empathetic, you have to be caring. And you can't just be like, well, this is an hourly role, I can find any Joe Blow to fill it. Let's not be like that, because that's for the birds, all right?
Yeah.
We are better.
Please don't do that, people. Be better, people.
If you're a talentless recruiter, listen, we do better, all right?
We do better. Yes, we do.
We do better.
We do better. I do think there's this element that I think sometimes recruiters don't think about. And this, for me, is something that I've grown into in probably the last 5 years. It's really understanding. And I'm not an HR person. It was never my goal to be in HR, but understanding some of the legalities and compliance stuff that comes with a lot of these things. And it's been a really tough road for me for 5 years, because I read a lot, but I don't want to read an HR book. And I don't want to read compliance stuff. But I do think there's this element that recruiters need to understand, especially in those hourly roles, that what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do or say or whatever. And I think that sometimes we skip that part because we figure we're not in HR. But I think that's super important for people to at least understand the nuances to that particular role. And maybe I'm overstating it, but I know it's helped me be a better recruiter. When I was introduced to recruiting, no one sat me down and was like, here's all the legal compliance things you should be thinking about. No, they're like, fill the seat, put a body in the seat. I don't care how you get there. And I hope that people, and this goes along with this empathy thing too, to me, is think about what you're allowed to do, say, be, how you are as a person to that candidate, but understand the nuances and the laws for your state, and because they're different, right? They're different for every state. I couldn't probably even tell you what the Texas are right now, but I do know some of them. But I think it's a piece that's missing from recruiting a little bit.
Not only that, but not to add a crazy layer, but for the most part, union bargaining agreements are only for non-exempt. So you don't usually traditionally have salaries and CBAs.
Yes.
So even just that nuance as well, we have a whole other third party to talk about. But I mean, there are much more different things as far as literal hourly restrictions. Like if they're 40 hours a week,
right?
I mean, some of that's company policy. Like, you don't go overtime. You do. Some companies have overtime built in. DuPont schedules do. All of those things are on purpose. Yep. So there are some different laws that I feel everyone should know. And then there are going to be specific things that are to the organization as a whole that are preferences. Yeah.
I agree. But
so they should be teaching both.
Right. I agree with you. Like, yeah. There are, I mean, baby recruiters, like if you're a TA leader, I suggest that you hold like in your onboarding some kind of for your junior recruiters. They're honestly really not even going to be thinking that way, right? They're going to be thinking about wearing the ATS.
They have no concept too.
No.
They don't know what they don't know.
They don't know what they don't know. Absolutely. Absolutely. When I started recruiting now as a formal recruiter, I had to teach myself that. And if I could go back and say one thing to that leader, I would say, why didn't you teach me some of this stuff without me having to do it on my own? And I encourage leaders to think about that piece that they're missing, maybe that they've never even really thought about why I need to teach this person that thing. But this is why, right? Yeah. These are the new, to be a good mentor in talent, I think this is a piece that maybe we don't think about all the time. So I encourage people to do that.
Yeah,
I really do.
And I would definitely say, to be honest, that's why we made the podcast too, is because we knew people weren't teaching people.
Yeah.
We knew that people were coming into businesses and just saying, oh, you got hired as a recruiter. Okay, I assume that you know everything of a recruiter. Go now. And like, that's the training for the most part. I was the very opposite of you. I was put into a very thorough program, 2 weeks in Dallas. We had multiple trainers. We had books. We had a full cohort, check-ins. We had follow-ups. It was very thorough and it was an excellent program. And to be quite frank, I was very unaware that no one else got that. Yeah. It wasn't until I went to another organization and was like, okay, well, that's not going to be, you know, whatever, compliant. And they were like, what do you know about compliance? And I was like, what do you not know about compliance? Like, you should be knowing everything. Like, you deal with it in its own way. Like, even if it's just impact or influence, it's still enough. It's enough for you to be held responsible if something happens and if things go wrong. So I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think hashtag talentless heroes to all of those talent leaders really doing the work in this space and that program that you went through. I mean, I could just applaud them all day. But I promise you, most recruiters, like the average, if I just had to take the average, most of us would probably say, we did not go through that.
Oh, I not only did y'all not go from that through that, but that's why I made DEI Labs, because I know all these people didn't get trained. I done worked with them now. So
I done it did it like, now.
You know what? Yeah, I see it now, clear as day. The rain has gone, you know?
And I think the last part that we probably should touch on, and I don't want to touch on it too much, but is that very senior level C-suite nuance, right? That senior level white glove service, which is very, very different. And I've done a lot of executive recruiting over my years, and it is a totally different monster, right? These people come with big egos. They've done a lot in their careers. They have accomplished a lot. I mean, they've written things, they've done things, they have books, they have, and to talk to them, right, is different than talking to even a software engineer. And I think there's a nuance to doing executive recruiting that you only get to and really get skilled at until you really delved into being very cognizant of people's egos, asking very comfortable questions. And it sounds like we're tiptoeing, but we're not. We're being, very respectful of the life that this person has led and the career that they've built for themselves, but you still need to get to the place where they fill that role, right? You still need to get what their skills and qualifications are. And so it does take a balance there. It really does.
Hey, so the one part of talent you will never catch me in.
Is executive.
I have done it multiple times. I get thrown into it all the time because people are like, you know how to talk about things. Let me tell you something.
We're going to stop that accent on this call.
I don't know that we can.
I know. I don't think so either.
I mean, I think it's the only one like I'm allowed to even have, like, as far as I'm concerned, to be quite frank. So like it's my jurisdiction. It's what's legal. I'm going to be the country bumpkin podunk. Woo! It's going good.
Oh my God.
I was talking about something.
You were on. You were doing so good. And I interrupted you about the country bumpkin stuff.
Twice now.
But you were saying that you would never do that type of recruiting.
I bloody hate it. And let me tell you why. These people are the most hoitiest, toitiest, toitiest, joitiest. And if you are an executive person that I have spoken to in the past, know that I'm not lying. Know that I still stand by it. And I'm 10 toes down on that. Because literally, I mean, there were times where I, like, with executive recruiting, you have to be on your P's and Q's because every single second of this person's time is like hundreds of dollars.
It's money.
It is money. It is money. So if you are on the phone with them and don't have quality ass relevant questions where you've done hella research, you know all the answers they're going to be needing and asking, everything that's relevant to them. I mean, it is a very few small rec headcount, hard research and development, big sell, big ego coddling, big brown nose, big things that I hate and I just can't do because I'm not that kind of person. Sorry. I mean, that's my thing with executive recruiting is it just
I actually love it. I like to talk to people.
That makes sense to me because I love
because I'm hoity-toity. Thanks very much.
But you can appreciate the hoity-toity.
I do.
I don't have that kind of appreciation. In fact, I find it like, I don't understand you. Not that you're wrong. Not that it's bad, but it's just not.
I think I respect what people have built over time. I don't think it's like I respect the ego. I do respect. And most executives that I find, not all of them, let's be very clear, you know, they have a mild ego, but it's not overwhelming. They're not going to disrespect you most of the time because they still want a job. But, you know, I do have respect for them, what they've built over time. I mean, listen, I'm just trying to do this penny ass podcast. Excuse me, I curse.
Desiree.
I know.
Desiree Maria Goldie.
I know. But I'm just trying to do this little podcast. They've, you know, done things I actually don't want to do, but they've done some great things. And so I'm always a little bit respectful of them. And we have some great conversations and sometimes I learn a lot. So it's always, for me, I think there's just a respect level, but I know it's different. And I know that going into those conversations, if they schedule 45 minutes, they want all 45 minutes and they are probably going to go over. Because they talk about themselves.
If they talk, right? If you ask them about them, good Lord, get ready for their podcast.
Get ready for them. They're doing a whole podcast episode.
They're
going
to give you a podcast, their favorite monologue, their auto bio. Here it goes. And that's honestly another reason that I hate those is because those calls last five ever. Yeah, and I'm like, I just asked you one question and that was, where are you located? And now I know about your kids, why you chose this college route, how you lost all your money. Bankrupt, got divorced, and now have a book. Like, okay. And that's
it's so true, though. It's so true. It's so true that they would go down that rabbit hole. But I don't know. I don't mind it.
I know. Honestly, it's me. I am the problem. And I know that. I always have been. I have met really like great famous people and just been like, what's up, dog? Like, it's gotten me in trouble.
Only Ashley.
But it's also gotten me in the room because they're like, all right, you're not trying to just toot my horns. And I'm like, no, I didn't even know you had a horn. I don't even know who you are. Like half the time. So
I will say though, too, though, being a SME in that moment is the most important because if you even falter a little bit, like you don't know what, I think you mentioned this a little bit, but if you don't look like you don't know what you're talking about or what that organization does or how they can benefit, what the role is, the process, the comp, they're like, okay. And you could physically feel through the screen that they're like turned off. They're like, okay. And so I think that being a SME, I'm not saying not don't do it everywhere else too. You should be always that person. But I think in executive recruiting, it's definitely a different level of having all the answers and having them at the ready, right?
Ready, having them relevant.
Yes.
Then, like, because that's, again, because time is money for them.
Yeah.
And if you're not giving them money, you better be giving them knowledge. That's the other commodity that they will accept. And if you can't bring that to the table and all you're bringing is your plate, they don't want to eat with you.
Yeah.
Like, that's the sum of its parts. And honestly, I think that's why I'm kind of cool with just being like, what's up, dog? Because I know if I'm saying what's up, dog, I know my shit. And I'm going to bring to the table a plate full for you.
But I do think that confidence in executive recruiting is 100% how you come at that at recruiting there. You have to come confident because they will, they can smell it when you're like, you know, when you don't have a little bit of confidence, they can smell it and it turns them off immediately. So I believe in the what's up dog moment. I believe in the like, you know, I can't
even
just
say not
that
starting
correctly.
With it.
I can't even say like what's up dog correctly, people. But
what?
Yeah, what's up dog? Like
what's up, dog?
My wife can say it better than me. I just want everyone to know. Okay.
Didn't they used to say that on the Taco Bell commercials? The little taquito Taco Bell.
Yes.
What's up, dog? Yeah.
Yeah. Don't
okay.
Say that
whatever. Again. Okay. Well, I
thank
love
you. This has been a wonderful, wonderful episode. But this is the part of this show where we get into the cognitive and psychological side about what we've been talking about. And Ashley King always brings us the knowledge, so I'm going to let her do the talent outside the box.
All right. So one thing that I wanted to share with the team, and this is actually going to be a little bit different than cognitive psychology. This is going to be a recruiting tip. So listen, it's late at night right now. No one has to use their brain.
Love it.
So, yeah, here we go. The trick I use to better understand the actual skills needed in a role whenever I am working with a hiring manager is a quick kind of combo and simple question. So whenever the manager names a skill, like let's think of a recruiter. I need my recruiter to be able to source. I need my recruiter to be able to screen, schedule, have manager influence, all of these different things. One of the things that I often ask is how often are they going to do this task and what is the importance of this task. One of the examples that we've used before on the show, and I will, you know, use it again here, is whenever we do think of a recruiter and the most important thing we do is fill roles, right? Like we get booties in seats, we get high quality candidates, things like that. However, what we do the most is probably sourcing, screening, communicating. Like it's a very different skill set of what it takes to fill the role, those acts, versus just fill the role. And so whenever you differentiate that and you can see what happens most often versus what happens is the most important. For instance, we reject 100 candidates, offer one. Which one happens the most often? Declining. And so we need to be best at that. Not that we should be shabby at, you know, offers. We want to always close. But we also want to be great and diligent about the other 99 as well. And so essentially, whenever I ask this, it's because not all skills are created equal and not all mashup is the same mashup of skills that you need every single time. Even if you're hiring for the same job title, same job code, everything the same way again, because of the team dichotomy and the needs of the business, it could still change the skill set. So for instance, I just mentioned screening, sourcing, scheduling, XYZ. Maybe by the time that we hire the same job code, we have scheduling coordinators and we don't need people who actually know how to do scheduling. We actually need them more for sourcing because we're having a hard time in time to fill roles and niche roles. Or it could be the other way around. So it could be things where, you know, recruiters are the hiring manager wizard. Other times, recruiters need to be sourcing SMEs, and so that really can help articulate and give you better balance to finding that right candidate and also painting an accurate picture of what this job is. Because I can tell you that if the job is 80% sourcing, I'm your girl, not Des. But if the role is 90% executive presence and purporting to executives and having those conversations that aren't me being cuckoo bananas, then that's all right. That's the one. But guess what? Same job title, same code. So those questions really help clear the noise and just let us get to the point of where we need to understand who could be the best fit for the role. And that's talent outside, inside, by the side of the box.
I want to thank everybody.
Of recruiters for recruiters. Sorry, just wanted to make sure that that was noted out in the universe. Trademark, patent pending, whatever else need be said audibly. Thank you.
All right. It's late night. It's crazy here at the Talentless Podcast. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Role Nuances of Why Your Job Isn't Their Job type of vibe. So it's been a spicy one, folks, but hit us up, talentlesspodcast.com, YouTube, follow us and subscribe. And everywhere you can find your podcast, we're pretty much there, folks. So sign up from hiring fail to hiring wins. See ya.
Bye.
I'm Desiree.
And I'm Ashley. And thanks for listening to Talentless, where we keep it real in the world of HR.
If you loved what you heard, don't forget to hit subscribe and give us a follow on Blue Sky, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We're here to keep your feed packed with everything you need to level up in recruitment and HR.
And be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And hey, don't miss out. Sign up for our newsletter for fresh insights and follow us on socials to stay connected with both Ashley and me.
Thanks again for joining us on Talentless. Until next time, we'll see you then.